First, we don't often get to hear sitting U.S. Supreme Court justices speak because recording equipment is not allowed in the courtroom. But justices are often invited to speak at things like graduations and other events. And Justice Antonin Scalia was very popular on that circuit. He used those opportunities not only to address and develop his theories on the law, but also on topics like faith, friendship, and people he considered heroes.
Justice Scalia died in 2016 at the age of 79. Christopher Scalia is the eighth of Justice Scalia's nine children and received his PhD in English from the UW-Madison. He's a former professor of English who now works at a public relations firm near Washington, D.C., and he recently published a collection of his father's speeches called Scalia Speaks, Reflections on Law, Faith, and Life Well Lived. Chris, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be on.
So in compiling this book, it is broken up into various topics ranging from religious conversations to looking at the Constitution. Your father, Antonin Scalia, Justice Scalia, spoke to a lot of people. What kind of groups was he called upon to speak to?
Well, obviously, the sort of group that most often invited him would have been legal organizations. And he often spoke to legal groups about his approach to the Constitution. But when we put together this collection, my co-editor, Ed Whalen, and I wanted to make sure that it would be enjoyable to not just legal scholars or law students or Supreme Court nerds, but the average American with kind of a basic interest in the law, in American history and government, and maybe my father's life. So we included a lot of speeches that he delivered to organizations like an Italian-American organization, an Irish-American organization, a speech he delivered at a Holocaust remembrance ceremony, and then high school and college commencement addresses are in here. There's a speech he delivered at Juilliard. There's a speech he delivered to a wild turkey hunting club. So it's a really, I knew he delivered a lot of speeches, but I really did not realize the variety of topics he covered in his speeches and the variety of audiences he spoke to.
And, you can see that in some of his speeches that aren't necessarily geared towards maybe the legal profession. I know he did speak about hunting at times and things mm-hmm. like that. Do you think that there might be a misconception sometimes about your father with him being a justice versus him being a person that wants to communicate with other groups sometimes?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Anybody who reads the speeches in Scalia Speaks will find that I think he's a lot more engaging and really open-minded than he's often portrayed and maybe comes across in some of his opinions. People like reading his dissents, and his opinions are very well written and quotable, but that's a specific type of writing that has to follow particular conventions that aren't really all that accessible for a lot of people. His speeches, as I was saying before, are more accessible to general audience because they don't have to follow that same conventions, but they're also opportunities for him to persuade people directly, kind of unfiltered through opinions and specific cases, to really explain himself and his approaches to jurisprudence and interpreting the Constitution and statutes. I think people will be really surprised by some of what he says about, for example, American identity, just because maybe preconceptions people have about what conservatives in general, but particularly his attitudes would be about American identity. But, his father was an immigrant, and he liked speaking to immigrant groups about, what it meant to be an American. And that one of the first speeches in this collection is about that, about it doesn't matter where you were born, it doesn't matter what your religion is, what matters is that you believe in the American ideals of freedom and opportunity.
It's interesting that we've been talking a little bit about some misconceptions about your father, Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. The person who wrote the foreword for the book was his colleague, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I think they have frequently been shown as being sort of the opposite sides of one coin, a lot of the times not always agreeing on things. How does that fold into, I guess, the portrait of him as a person?
Well, he got along with plenty of people who didn't agree with him politically or legally. Justice Ginsburg was absolutely one of his best friends, and they were close friends for a very long time, going back to the early 1980s when they were first judges together. she was gracious enough to write a very moving foreword to this collection, and the collection includes a roast he delivered for her when she was still on a circuit or an appeals court, and he was on the Supreme Court. They weren't colleagues anymore, and they weren't yet colleagues again. But it's a funny roast because he pokes fun at her a little bit. But then at the end of the speech, it's a very moving tribute to what a great friend she was and what a great colleague she was. As far as their working relationship went, they would, as you mentioned, they didn't agree on very much legally, but they would still help each other out with their opinions. And she describes how much she appreciated his feedback, his editorial comments on drafts of her opinions. Even when they disagreed, they helped each other write better opinions. And as far as their friendship went, they had enough in common. They grew up in New York City around the same time. They both loved opera. They even had kind of cameo appearances in operas together. And their spouses got along very well. Her late husband and my mother both loved to cook, and Justice Ginsburg and especially my dad both loved to eat. So they had plenty to bond over apart from their job.
And can you talk a little bit about the quote-unquote outline that he had?
Yeah, so for the most part, he had typed speeches in front of him, prepared remarks that were pretty orderly, and he didn't stick to them verbatim, but he still had a pretty clear guide. I saw him or heard him deliver a speech in Madison, Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin, in 2001, and it was a great speech. It was a speech he delivered pretty often, actually, and always got a good response, and he kind of used the speech to explain why he interpreted the Constitution as he did and why other methods were inferior. And when I started work on this project, I thought for sure I'd find that speech because he delivered it so often. But it turns out he never wrote that speech down. Instead, he just had something that he called the outline, which was a very fragmented set of notes. There weren't really any complete sentences on it. It wasn't even a full outline. If a student gave me this outline, I would expect a very shabby paper. But it was essentially a series of prompts that inspired certain thoughts in him that he could just riff off of and lead into a very impressive and engaging speech. He didn't really need much with it, but this outline was funny because he had it with him at all times, and apparently his secretary would make dozens of copies for it to always give him when he was off to deliver a speech. Even if the speech wasn't this outline, it was another prepared speech, he always had this speech handy with him, just the outline handy with him just in case.
We're talking to Chris Scalia right now. He is the son of the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia and recently published a collection of his father's called Scalia Speaks, Reflections on Law, Faith, and Life Well Lived. These are a collection of his speeches. And you were just talking about the speech that he delivered at UW-Madison where he was looking at the Constitution. I believe it had something to do with Prego tomato sauce. How was that received? What was he trying to get at with talking about Prego and I guess the Constitution here?
Well, this was another thing that when it was one of my favorite moments in this kind of stump speech he gave, and I thought for sure I'd find it, but he never wrote this down. He liked to kind of deliver it impromptu. But it's a criticism of what's called the living Constitution, and very basically the living Constitution approach to constitutional jurisprudence is that the Constitution is a living document whose meaning changes according to the moral standards of the age. My father's approach is called originalism, which seeks to interpret the Constitution based on its original public meaning at the time of its ratification. And my father's argument about the living Constitution is that it gives too much power to judges to basically apply their own policy preferences into the Constitution, even if the Constitution says nothing about that specific topic. Rather than leaving it up to democratic action, the living Constitution will just have judges determine that meaning, or kind of the phrase legislate from the bench. That's essentially what that applies to. So my father liked to compare the living Constitution approach to a Prego pasta sauce commercial from the 1980s. And I always loved it because I used to watch TV with him in the 80s, so it was just kind of a, It was funny for me to see him talking about this commercial we watched together. But his argument was, in this commercial, a woman is cooking or is heating up tomato sauce, and her husband's unhappy that it's not homemade. And he says, "You can't make this store-bought sauce. Does it have the oregano?" And she says, "It's in there." "Okay, but does it have the onion?" "It's in there." What about the garlic?" "It's in there." And my dad would say, "We've got that kind of a constitution now. You want a right to an abortion? It's in there. You want a right to die? It's in there. Anything that's good and true, any policy preference you like, it's in there, regardless of what the document actually says." And I always thought that was a really effective way, very funny, but effective way of explaining some of the problems with the living constitution approach to jurisprudence, while delivering it to a general audience, an audience that hasn't studied law.
And you say in your book that your father had a bit of a wicked sense of humor, and it sounds as though in this UW-Madison speech, because he was coming to speak here at your commencement, if I'm correct, how did his sense of humor, how did he sometimes shine in the speeches where he was not only a justice and a lawyer, but also a person that got to, I guess, think about these things and sort of ruminate on these issues?
Well, unlike court opinions, my father could let a lot more of his personality come through, and his love of performing come through in the speeches. Yeah, he loved to perform. He was, as I say in my introduction to this collection, he was a little bit of a ham. He played the starring role in his high school's performance of Macbeth, and he was the president of Georgetown's theater club. And he loved telling jokes. He's a great joke teller, a great storyteller, and speeches would let those elements of his personality really shine through in a way that opinions couldn't. But he was also, in his speeches, he had this great self-deprecating humor. There's one speech in here in which he describes the games and sports he played growing up as a boy in Queens. And the speech begins something like, "I am often asked, to what do I attribute my athletic prowess?" And of course, nobody ever asked him that, because after all, he spent his career, he made his living by sitting on a bench, not as an athlete. So this book has many moments of great humor like that, often at his own expense.
For people who are picking up this book, what do you hope they learn about him through these speeches?
Well, I hope that they learn more about his approach to the law and why he held the legal opinions he did. But I think that they're also going to learn a lot more about what he was like as a person. You know, what values he held, and why he loved America as much as he did. What he admired about the different people that make up the American body politic and American history.
And your father died last year in February. What was it like for you to revisit your father's words in the year following his death?
It was cathartic because, well, it was a lot of fun, and it was cathartic because his voice is so strong in these speeches. I really did feel often as if he was actually in the room with me delivering these speeches and saying these things to me. It was, you know, it was a privilege to be a part of this project and to get these speeches out to a broad audience, but it was also just kind of a very moving experience having this, you know, connection again with him.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Christopher Scalia is the son of the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. He recently edited and published a collection of his father's speeches called Scalia Speaks: Reflections on Law, Faith, and Life Well Lived.